Hi, friends. Welcome to the show. I'm Ross, your host. This is Bayou de Beltway. And today we are talking about constitutional amendments. We're speaking with someone who knows all about constitutional amendments, and he's going to tell us all about them. His name is Stephen Procopio. He's has his doctorate, president of the Public Affairs Research Council, which he joined as policy director in 2014 and worked there for a long time. Or in 2021, he was chosen to lead PAR. He's had a number of other positions of responsibility in the Louisiana governmental system, working for LSU as well. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So Louisiana's passed, and I know this seems crazy, but since I got it from some of your materials, I'm assuming that it's correct. Louisiana passed 221 constitutional amendments since 1974. Currently, we have another four before the voters. What should voters think about this?
You know, this four amendments, it actually can be less than we normally have in a given year. But there's one very substantial one, which is amendment number two. A couple of things to know. There are normal amendments, you know, like some of the others on during the judiciary. Then you could have a whole constitutional convention. But amendment number two is actually a rewrite of an entire article of the Constitution. So it's a little different than we used to.
That's crazy. A rewrite of an entire amendment in an amendment. So that seems crazy. Is this legal for amendment two to do? I thought there was something about amendments are supposed to have one major effect or something like that.
Well, most amendments and all bills, object. So there's the one thing that you're supposed to be focused on. However, in the Constitution, like I said, there are three ways to amend the Constitution. One, you can have a constitutional convention. Two, you can have a regular amendment. It's what most people are used to. You go in, you change one part, and has a single, you know, focus to it. But in the Constitution, there's a thing that's an entire article of the Constitution. We got 14 articles in the Constitution, and the one there is Article 7. So no, yes, this is definitely was anticipated by the writers of the 1974 Constitution.
That is crazy. Why are they tackling it this way, the legislators I'm referring to? Why are the legislators tackling it in amendment form rather than just doing a rewrite of, you know, 7 in the Constitution?
So why are they doing it as a rewrite of Article 7 as opposed to a series of amendments?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You could do it either way. The issue is that some of these amendments interact with each other. And so, you know, instead of doing one big amendment, you might have somewhere around 14 different amendments. And then it gets complicated because if one part touches another, like you're merging funds in one and you're using some of the funds there in another part, it gets very complicated with contingencies. So you could do it, and you could also do it through a whole constitutional convention. That's another way to do it. But to focus just on the tax and spending part, this is probably the most direct way to do it.
Thanks. Got it. So, you know, as briefly as you can, what are the most impactful parts of Amendment 2?
So there are some small ones, but are very impactful. For example, the standard deduction for those over 65 will double. You know, that's a very small line in the change, but probably could affect a lot of people. Probably one of the bigger ones that affects a lot of people is the making permanent the pay raise that teachers have gotten. So they already have a $2,000 sort of stipend they've gotten for the past 2 years, and support staff have got $1,000. But that is not permanent. It's not in the K-12 funding formula. The amendment would liquidate some funds that are used for education, $2 billion. That dollars would then be used to pay down the debt from the retirement system, which would then free up, you don't have to make those debt payments anymore. And then those school systems would then be mandated to use those savings, $1,000 pay, or to make permanent the pay raise that they've already got.
Now, what are the arguments against this? Someone said, I saw that someone said this is not really a pay raise. It's just making permanent what they already have been given.
Well, and to one thing, that is true. On the other hand, if they don't do that, there is no money to continue the pay raise in the governor's budget.
Gotcha.
So while it's not permanent, the pay raise they have now is not permanent either. So if they don't find a funding stream for it, and this would provide one funding stream, they'd either have to raise taxes or may cut someplace else.
Okay. What else is in two?
There is a government growth limit. So we have an expenditure limit. So if you have a huge surge in revenues, you can't spend above a certain amount. This would add a growth limit that, again, has an amount that's based on inflation and population change. And if you go above this limit, you can spend the money, but you can only spend it on non-recurring items like roads and deferred maintenance on, you know, campus buildings and things like that.
So let me get this straight. So this means that, let's say government hits a period of prosperity. There's some sort of windfall where we're really doing well. We're bringing in lots of revenue. But this would say, well, despite all this extra revenue, you can't put that into recurring expenditures. You have to spend it, if you want, one-time stuff only, so that it doesn't obligate the government for future expenditure.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you couldn't hire more staff. But you could build more things or buy more computers, acquisitions, things like that.
Okay. Does Parr think that's a good idea?
So, as you know, we don't take position on these amendments. We just try.
Come on, be brave.
No, that's not brave. That's our, you know, 75-year policy going back as long as Parr has existed. We've done a guide to all of the amendments since that time. So, no, we think there's more value in providing information. And then let people make up their own minds, because some people might really like that. If you're more conservative, you might really think that that's a great idea. If you're more liberal, you might think, no, we have a lot of needs in the state. We need to be able to spend them. So I don't know this is necessarily a right answer, but we want to make sure people can figure out what it is for themselves.
Or if you're a historian of Louisiana state government, you might say, yeah, that's what they do. They wait until there's a budget surplus, and then they either cut taxes or commit the government to spend more money. So,
that's,
you know,
right.
The cynical would maybe say that. So what's this about merging the Revenue Stabilization Trust Fund with the Budget Stabilization Trust Fund?
Okay. This is an important one, though. Unfortunately, it's a little weedy and a little technical. So we really have two savings funds in the accounts. We have the one we've had for a long time, which is the Budget Stabilization Fund. It's what's known as the Rainy Day Fund. So if you think of the Rainy Day Fund, that one's going to still exist. Then there's also the Revenue Stabilization Fund. That one, a large chunk of that money, close to, you know, $2 billion, a little less, is going to be moved from that fund into the Budget Stabilization Fund. And it's left behind to pay for some incentive programs and some you know, other things. That's a little bit too part of this as well. So then we would have a really large Budget Stabilization Fund. That was founded or created because of oil revenue and the booms and busts we had in the 80s. They said, look, we can't spend all the oil revenue that we have because it's so volatile. We'll end up growing government that's unsustainable. So they set this up and they kind of cut off the top. If you make too much oil revenue, it goes into this fund. And then if the government has a shortfall or a disaster, then you can tap into that fund and use it. And it's something similar for the Revenue Stabilization Fund, only it's based mostly on corporate revenue. So then you would have this sort of combined one of the most well-funded rainy day funds in the top 15 of what's going on in the rest of the country. So that would essentially create one fund that has a little more protection, but has a lot more money. Now, what it also does, though, it takes away some of the funding sources that would normally a fund rolled into these funds. So the mineral revenue dedication and the corporate revenue dedication would go away, and you would only fund it with surplus revenue. And there's like a $25 million dedication as well. So it's a really well-funded rainy day fund, but the continuing funding and ability to fill it up again becomes a little less.
Well, if you just tuned in, we are talking to Stephen Procopio, who is president and CEO of PAR, Public Affairs Research Council, and publish every time when they need to, a guide. And there is such a guide available free online in a PDF format. It's called PAR Guide to the 2025 Constitutional Amendments. So PAR has been around a long time, and they're a trusted source of news and information about everything Louisiana, particularly everything Louisiana government. So I wanted to make sure to get your plug in, Stephen.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we do a lot of work to try and help people understand these things.
Right. Now, is there something in there about a tax change or something taxing authority?
Well,
about the tax rate?
There are a couple of things dealing with taxes. the tax rate, and I think this one is probably over discussed, honestly, the top tax rate is going to go from 4.75 to 3.75. Now, understand this is not the current tax rate. This is the maximum allowable tax rate. So right now, the income tax rate is 3. If the legislature wanted to change it, currently, they could go all the way up to 4.75. This the amendment would cap it at 3.75. So no one's taxes would change. Their tax rate wouldn't change. So no one would, if this passes. It would just limit the legislature's ability to further increase taxes in the future.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Without a constitutional amendment, because, of course, everything can be amended through Constitution. Yeah. So there is something. What about trust funds and eliminating retirement debt?
Well, the eliminating the retirement debt is linked to the teacher pay. So okay. When you eliminate those trust funds, that money is then used to pay down teacher debt. So you go from about $8 billion worth of retirement debt to about $6 billion worth of retirement debt. And then those savings, the annual payments you have to make, the debt payments, go down by about $200 million for K-12. And then that money is then is supposed to be used for teacher pay raises. Now, since we return to the $200 million is enough to pay for the $2,000 everywhere. Unfortunately, it's not every school district gets the same savings. So some people will have extra money to spend beyond the pay raise. And then some districts won't have quite enough to give the whole $2,000. And then what the governor has said is that he would make any district whole, including charter schools, if they need that extra money.
Well, we're going to have to come back and talk about that. We got a couple minutes left. Can we quickly go through Amendments 1, 3, and 4?
Sure. These all deal with judicial issues or Article 5. So the first one, Amendment number 1, would the core of that one is it would allow for specialty courts beyond the parish level or judicial level. So you could have a statewide specialty court. Most specialty courts in the state are drug courts. The author was really looking to do something like more like a business court in the state. Amendment number 3 deals with the prosecution of juveniles for felony crimes. There's a list of 16 crimes in the Constitution that you may be tried as an adult for. Not necessarily, you have to have the district attorney or the judge wants to approve that. Those would move out of the Constitution, and then with a two-thirds vote, the legislature could determine what is or isn't in that list. So it gives them more flexibility on this. And the last one, Amendment number 4, is really more tactical. When we move to a closed primary system for some races, they also changed when elections can be had, and they added another potential election because instead of just a general election and a runoff, now you're going to have a primary, a runoff from the primary, and then the election. So that expanded the date. Now, Supreme Court vacancies have their own timeline in the Constitution, and those don't work well because you have to have those within 12 months. You may not be able to get it done in 12 months, given what the new primary system does. So this would give them some flexibility so that you could see the judge after 12 months.
Wow. Well, thanks. That was a great rundown. Now, these are on the ballot March 29th.
That's right.
And they're going to, if they do pass, they will add to the length of the Constitution. We got about 15 seconds left. Let me introduce you one more time because I'm really happy that you came and talked to us today. We've been talking with Stephen Procopio, who is the president, CEO of Public Affairs Research Council of Louisiana, known as PAR. And he's talking about the amendments that are going to be on the ballot. And we just really thank you for coming in. I think you've shed a lot of light in a very short time, and we certainly appreciate it.
No, I appreciate the fact that you're helping to educate people as well. It is a useful service, and keep it up the good work.
Thanks so much.